Welcome to Mom and Up.
With your co-host, developmental psychologist Dr. Marty Erickson and Dr. Aaron Erickson, maternal child health specialist and nurse practitioner.
Here's my grandma Marty. And here's Aaron, my mom and Nana.
Welcome to Mom Enough. I'm Aaron Erickson here with my mom, Marty, and today we are going to be talking about a phenomenal program for mentorship for autistic teens. And I am so thrilled to introduce our guest, Emily Goldberg, the founder of the Autism Mentorship Program that we'll be talking about today. Emily parents 9th grade autistic twin boys whose insights sparked the idea for AMP. A documentary filmmaker, video, and podcast producer by profession, she brings decades of communication, avid research, and deep listening skills to the program's development. Emily oversees the program, engaging in strategic planning, establishing partnerships, and working to secure financial support. And our other guest, Uma Oswald, is a disability advocate and former professional artist who is autistic and has also lived with schizophrenia for the past decade. They have been a mentor in AMP since the fall of 2022 and will be sharing their experience with us. So thank you so much for joining us, Emily and Uma.
Thanks. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, too.
Well, I'm so happy to welcome you too. I'm Aaron. Who am I? I'm Marty. I'd like to be Aaron.
Take a little pause there.
She's a lot younger. Yeah. Oh no, don't delete that. Let's not edit that. That's a good one.
All right, Aaron, you have a question for our guests.
I'm Marty, Aaron's mom, and I have a question. Emily, could you just tell us what exactly the Autism Mentorship Program is, you know,
sure.
in concrete terms so people can get the idea of it?
Yeah, so it's a one-to-one online mentorship program for Twin Cities autistic teens, ages 14 to 18 now. We may expand to include more ages. And the mentorship is provided by autistic adults. It is a program that was designed by autistic individuals, parents of autistic kids, educators, mentorship experts. We all got together and created this program. It's a supported mentorship, which means that there are session facilitators for every session, all of whom are autistic, who help with providing topic ideas, who provide support as needed if people get stuck during a conversation. They jump in and kind of help out. And we originally piloted this program with 7 mentor-mentee pairs back in 2018. And this year we have 25.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, what a cool program. And I can imagine for the young autistic teens that this is super helpful to just have this supportive connection. So can you talk a little bit about why a program like this is so needed?
Yeah, well, I think the best way to tell that, to answer that question is to tell the story of kind of how the program started, because it really started from one of my son's direct experiences when he was 8 years old. He had one friend that he played with regularly at school, and that was a big deal for him because friendship can be challenging for autistic people. And one day, a third child joined their play group at recess, and he came home so upset because he didn't understand like how to interact with another person. He didn't understand the rules of the game. He felt left out. He was crying and so upset, and he said, "Mom, nobody understands me, not even you, because your brain works different than mine." And that really hit me hard. I mean, at first I comforted him and said, you know, I think we understand each other pretty well. You know, everybody's brain works different from everybody else's. But it really got me thinking about the fact that here was a kid who had a lot of support from his family, from school. You know, he had special ed support. He had, you know, school therapists, OT and speech therapy. He had therapy outside of school at Fraser, getting autism services. And as far as I knew, and I thought through every single person that he interacted with, none of those people was actually autistic themselves. And it really made me think, like, how would you get through life without having a role model who process the world in a similar way to you. And I thought, this is a huge gap in my kids' lives, and I think they need this. And so I called around, I said, I've got to get these kids autistic mentors. And I called, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, lots of other places, and I couldn't find anything like this anywhere. And I looked online, and I couldn't find anything in the Twin Cities. I couldn't find anything in Minnesota. I couldn't find anything anywhere on the World Wide Web. So again, it hit me that this is, and there are programs, there definitely were and are programs that pair autistic youth with neurotypical adults, but that's not the same kind of thing. And so I talked to other people, other families with autistic kids, talked to the kids, talked to the parents, said, is this something that you would be interested in if it existed? And they were all like, oh, yes. And I went to autistic support groups to find out if autistic people adults would be interested. I was worried some of them might not want to step back into possibly, traumatic memories of being a teen with autism and not being well supported. And they all to a one said, I wish I had had a program like this when I was growing up. And B, I would love to help and support, younger versions of myself. So that's really why the program came around. And no such program existed at the time. As far as I know, still doesn't. I think we're the only one. It not only helps youth, but it also gives the adult mentors, the experts when it comes to autism, the chance to be leaders and role models. And it was really important to me, I'll stop talking because I know I'm talking a lot, but it was really important to me that autistic people be involved in the shaping of the program, because I did not want it to be yet another program that was developed by neurotypical people for autistic people. So from the beginning, autistic people have been at the drawing board as we design this program. One other thing is that, the transition to adulthood can be really difficult for everyone, but often, especially for autistic youth, because a lot of the services kind of drop off. Once you're out of high school, you don't have much support. And if you've been lucky enough to have support through those years in school, it's like, oh no, what comes next? How do I navigate what comes after high school? So that's a time when, that's why we began with this age group. I mean, ideally we'd love to serve youth and people ages 3 through 99, who doesn't need a mentor, right? But we started with high school because we're working with the University of Minnesota as our research team, and they said we need to pick up, for being able to be able to study effectively, we need to pick a smaller kind of control group to measure. And we asked our autistic consultants, where should we begin? And they said high school was the hugest time of need for us. It's when we felt depressed, and when we felt, had suicidal ideation, and when we felt really worried about what was coming next. So that's why we're serving high school students.
Well, Emily, I am just so impressed with what you've done, and I just love the fact that you had these ideas and then you really were persistent and diligent in putting them into action. And so I just applaud you, and I think, we have listeners all across the U.S. and in several different countries, and I think people are really going to be wanting to contact you and learn more about this and see if they can do the same thing, because I have heard about this need every single time I've talked to parents with kids on the autism spectrum. And I just think it's a huge thing that you're doing. So Uma, I want to hear from you. Why did you want to be a mentor?
So, I'm 27. I had just been identified as autistic when I was 25. So, that's pretty late in the game, I guess. And when I found out, I was struggling with a lot of grief and anger. I felt like I missed out on a whole community and sense of belonging. I use they, them pronouns, but obviously I look female. I sound female. I was assigned female at birth. And a lot of girls aren't identified as autistic until much later, if at all.
Yeah.
My parents had actually put me in private school because they, I don't like the term special needs, because I just find it derogatory and a euphemism. But my parents thought I was special needs, so they put me in private school because they thought I'd be eaten alive in public school. But what was ended up being damaging was growing up, my teachers would say, oh, you know, she's not autistic or have challenges. She's very gifted. I was writing letters to President Bush about the global war on terror when I was 8, you know, and I was reading Shakespeare when I was 10 in fourth grade.
Wow.
So, you know, here maybe I was academically gifted, but I really struggled socially. I remember as early as 4 having just crippling anxiety. My parents actually put me in therapy. And then I think by 7 or 8, I started to really notice these social differences. And I think what Emily described about her children is very relatable. I really struggled with social cues. And then by high school, about 15, 16, I started to experience schizophrenia. And it wasn't actually diagnosed until I was about 20, 21. And I just remember how incredibly painful high school was. I didn't have any friends or to say, I think I ended up dropping them all. And I wanted to be a mentor because I didn't want, especially a high schooler, you know, to experience the same level of, I guess, psychological damage and turmoil that I had experienced. I didn't want them to feel left out.
Wow. Well, Uma, I just really appreciate your courage and vulnerability in sharing your personal experience. And I can imagine how helpful that is, and can just hear what a caring person you are that you want to help others.
Erin, can I just inject something here? I'm just thinking about what you and I often talk about in terms of the three C's, connection, competence, and contribution, that are known from lots and lots of human development research to be key protective factors or assets in helping kids grow up well. And I'm just thinking about Uma and what this experience of contributing to other young people's development in this way must mean. And I you know, we can chat about that maybe a little later in this conversation, Uma, but you know, I just hear you sounding so confident and so poised. I really
thank you.
I mean, you can take my seat as a radio show host because our podcast host now. Yeah, you. I'm bumbling along, especially today. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I think that's the other huge aspect of this program, is what it can give to the people who are mentoring. And that's true. You know, whatever the issue is, or you know why, for whatever reason, somebody is a mentor or a mentee. But both people, I think, can just benefit so enormously. And I'm just really seeing that in Uma.
Yeah, that's so clear. So I think people might be interested to know what this mentor-mentee relationship looks like. Like, what do you do? What do you talk about? How do you think the program is helping your mentee?
Yeah, you know, I kind of laugh about what we talk about. On one end, you know, we talk about things like linguistics, maybe how, for example, in Britain, you call French fries chips, and in America, we call it French fries. And, you know, we just talk about that a lot, or we talk about art. I'm not going to name my mentee, but he's very creative, very artistic. And you know, I went to art school. I went to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. So we talk about art a lot. He is a very avid bowler, which I'm terrible at bowling. And then, you know, on the other end, it makes me laugh. We talk about very serious topics. One thing he asks me a lot, or we talk a lot about, is dying. And you know, he asks me a lot about, well, what happens if I die or you die or somebody dies, or what if I die from this illness, or what if I get diabetes or, you know, lung cancer. And I was listening to him, you know, because he asks me this often, and I started to realize that really what this question was, this health anxiety, it was really a fear of what happens next. You know, he's a decade younger than me, so he's 16. And I remember at that age, too, I had this same fear. So then I started to approach him with, addressing change. You know, what comes next after high school? I remember when I was in high school and I was going to go to college, I thought that I had to, like, bring literally every single belonging. I didn't understand, like, I could leave, you know, clothes or books or whatever at home. So with my mentee, we started talking about what change looked like, what would happen next, what does, you know, learning to be an adult look like. It doesn't just, you know, happen right away. It's a process. So, you know, we talk about that, and I try to assure him, like, you know, don't worry, it all happens slowly. And he also constantly asks me, are we friends? And, you know, I love when he asks me that, and he probably asks me that about 3 times every time we hang out. And that's called, you know, perseveration. It's this repetitiveness, this one-track mind. But I really love this question because, again, when I was younger, I didn't understand when someone was my friend or, you know, maybe to what level they like me. And I would often have to ask them, oh, would you like to be friends? And as an adult, I've kind of made that more, you know, chalant. Like, I don't ask that so directly. But so with my mentee, when he asks me, instead of just saying yes, you know, I have to be very concise and specific. So I'll say to him, well, would you like to be friends? Which he says yes, and I say I would too. And I say, why do you think we're friends? And a lot of times he's silent because he's maybe processing. But then I start to tell him, you know, well, we're friends because I care about you. I want you to do well. I'm your mentor. You're my mentee. We have things in common and we have fun together. And, you know, knowing my mentee now, what would it be? I think, yeah,
Two years.
He's really blossomed. At least to me, he seems more confident, more relaxed, maybe a little less anxious. You know, we're talking a little bit less about, you know, death and health anxiety now. But I hope that he sees that. You know, at least through me, you know, I work at the U, I'm in research. I hope that he can see that autistic people can be really accomplished and we don't have to be seen as like this less than or infantilized, you know, treated like children or babies.
Yeah. Wow.
That is so powerful. And you,
was that concise?
I hope that was wonderful.
It wasn't tangential. I know I say a lot. It's to kind of try to recollect.
That
my
was
thoughts.
Beautiful. Uma.
Yeah. Oh, thank
really.
You.
I have tears in my eyes. I don't know if you can see that on our camera, but no, it's very moving. And you know,
I
gave a beautiful summary of what this person has gone through.
Oh, thank you. You know, I wanted to add too. When I was about 21, 22. Again, having schizophrenia, schizophrenia and autism are common to have together. It was incredibly debilitating. I had to leave this prestigious art school. I couldn't function at all or work or drive or anything. I mean, it was incredibly bad. My mom was gonna, you know, was thinking about putting me in a group home. And so for me to have kind of like rebounded where I can work in a professional setting, I live in an apartment with my partner and our dog. I've even started driving. You know, I never thought I'd be able to drive. So to share that with my mentee, where he's now asking me, like, oh, I want to learn how to drive. How do I do that? And I can tell him, like, you know, here are these hacks, you know, for instance, for driving. It makes me really proud to maybe be a role model of like this capability he can be. Like, you know, he doesn't have to have all these things if he doesn't want to. You know, having support is not bad. If he can't drive, that's fine. But at least he can see, like, you know, I don't have to be just boxed in this stereotype of, quote, you know, low functioning.
That's wonderful.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, you're talking a lot here about the benefits and the effectiveness of your mentorship for this young man. And that's really important to look at those individual stories. But Emily, I know you mentioned that you're doing work with researchers at the University of Minnesota. I actually was a professor and researcher at the U for many years. And so that's my, you know, that's my home turf back before I retired from the U. But how effective are you finding the program to be? What is the research showing? And I realize you may not be real far into it, but tell us what you know so far.
Yeah. I want to add one thing just to what Uma said, that, you know, in terms of, I love what they and their mentee are talking about. And just that what happens in the mentorship sessions is really much, very much driven by the pair themselves, and especially by the youth. So if the youth want, we have one pair that all they talk about is college. You know, how can I be autistic in college? We have other pairs that, you know, are just playing Connect Four and talking about like how their day went, you know, and what their audition for the, they're worried about their audition for the play. So it really is mentor driven and what the mentee driven and what the mentor wants to bring to it. Okay. But to answer your question. How effective is the program? So, we have a U of M research partners, and they've been following us since the very beginning, which has been great. So what they've seen over the years of studying our participants, with their consent, of course, is an increase in self-esteem and confidence, less a reduction in anxiety and depression, and this is for the mentees. Also less anxiety and depression in the mentors, interestingly, and higher quality of life for kind of everybody across the board, you know, more happiness quotient going on there. And we've also seen some anecdotally interesting things. Like, I remember the first year we did the pilot for this program, kids' grades went up like dramatically. We weren't even measuring that. And we'd hear from parents, you know, I always know when it's a Tuesday, because when we had the program, because, you know, Johnny, when he gets off the, you know, the program, he's like, talks to his sister, you know, and he never does that, you know, and he tells us about his day, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, there are all kinds of difficult to measure effects, I think, as well, that are happening. But it's been very positive in terms of what's been found by the researchers.
That's really impressive. And you know, it's no surprise to me that you see the results in the academic performance, too, because, you know, we sometimes get focused on just the details of academic content, knowledge or process. But social emotional well-being and mental health are just so foundational to all kinds of competence and success. And that's what I think you're seeing. It just makes total sense to me as a person who's a developmental psychologist and, you know, has worked in education a lot as well. So it's great that you're doing the research.
I think, you know, what some parents told us is that kids were more comfortable talking with their teachers, you know, just the communication barriers were kind of broken down, and that really helped in terms of how they did in school.
Well, I've really appreciated, I have two kids in college, and I've just really appreciated how much more all of these things have been normalized. Because the reality is we all have, you know, nobody's really, there's no like neuronormative kind of thing.
Neuronormal,
you
know? Right.
Yeah, we all have our things, and they're what make us the unique and wonderful people that we are. And so I hear so much more, like my daughter will talk about a good friend and she's like, oh yeah, she's autistic and she really likes this, but she doesn't like this. And we were talking about if we were ever roommates, we'd do this or something, you know, it's like very open communication. And it's just so wonderful because I feel like it creates a culture of acceptance where we can all be the people we are and we don't have to mask or try to be something we're not, which creates an immense amount of stress and distress and can create so many challenges. And
absolutely.
So that's been wonderful.
I think that's part of the power of this program. You know, really what, you know, measurement aside, like what I see in terms of the magic of the program is youth can come in and do exactly that. They can, for an hour a week, They don't have to try to fit in. They don't have to try to be something they're not. And maybe they don't get that in the rest of their life, you know, a lot of the time. And they can just be themselves with someone who understands and gets them. Like, that's what we all need, right?
Yeah. Well, and we can really destigmatize all of this. And I just especially appreciate Uma's story because they're really highlighting just the success that you can have regardless of what you're dealing with in life. And that's such a hopeful message for so many people, because I do think for a lot of people and probably a lot of parents, they worry, you know, what will my child's future look like? And the future is very bright, and this really highlights that in Uma's story especially. And Uma, I want to come back to you because Emily talked about the benefits not just for the mentees but also for the mentors. And I'd love to hear more about how this is helping you and what is something you've learned or discovered about yourself from participating in the program.
Yeah, so maybe to give some context, when the program ended last academic year, we were able to connect with our mentees outside of the program. So I did, you know, get to know my mentee in person over the summer. It's pretty funny because, you know, I'm 5'1", I'm a total shrimp, and he's got to be like a total foot taller than me. It's great because I didn't, you know, you just see them over Zoom. I didn't know what they look like in person. So, you know, some more context. When we've gone places, like I gave him a tour at the U, or I took him to, you know, the Minneapolis Institute of Art, he does these stims, and I call them big stims because they're these whole body movements and these vocal sounds. And I noticed he does this one particular stim when he's very happy. It brings me a lot of joy. And what I like is that, you know, I really don't care if people stare. I like that he can express himself freely. You know, growing up, I was really criticized or, you know, even yelled at and alienated by family members when I would do, you know, what I know now is autistic behaviors. So I started putting up this, I'll call it like a neurotypical facade. It's masking and it's a survival tactic. One comment I get a lot, when I tell people I'm autistic, they're like, oh, you know, you don't look autistic. You know, I hate that. And really in my diagnostics or, you know, diagnosis, I'm a level 2, which, you know, I don't always agree with the testing practices, but a level 2 is needing, you know, moderate support. So, you know, I could probably qualify for some formal supports if I needed them. But I started masking, and it's incredibly draining, and has caused me a lot of psychological damage. So being with my mentee, who clearly doesn't mask, I really love that because it's kind of helped me start to be comfortable. You know, at the beginning of mentoring, I was like, oh my God, imposter syndrome. You know, I was like, I don't know that I can do this. I have no clue how to mentor. Obviously, I've been autistic forever, but I've never really embraced it. I don't know what to do. And I was pleasantly surprised that in a lot of ways, he's done a lot of the mentoring for me, just, you know, subconsciously. And he's really helped with my confidence. You know, at first, I didn't really want people to know I'm autistic. And now I'm like, you know, H-E double hockey sticks, yeah, I'm autistic, you know, tell people this all the time. And I've actually started to go no contact with certain family members who ostracized me growing up. And actually, I have one parent, I'm not going to say which one, because I don't want them to maybe hear this and feel embarrassed, but I have one parent who holds a lot of stigma about disability. And I didn't tell them for a year that I was autistic because I was just kind of terrified about maybe some criticism I might get. But my parent found out through an article actually I was in. And at first this parent was really upset and we started talking about it more. And, you know, interestingly, they said to me, I think I might be maybe autistic too, you know, kind of this half joking, half serious. And for me, that was just incredibly rewarding because this parent and I had been, you know, I wouldn't say like estranged, but it was very tense. And so for them, or for me to be, first of all, comfortable with my autisticness, it was really great to then now see this reflected in another family member. So to go back to that, like, I think that's what my mentee did for me, made me comfortable, and then therefore I can kind of like pass that on to other people.
That's just amazing. Well, Uma, I'm just so impressed by you, and it's such a inspiring story, and I can think of so many people that I can't wait to listen to this and hear your story, and Emily to hear you know, what's next. And actually, I'd love to just ask you, what are you looking to do with the program moving forward?
Well, we'd like to grow and serve more people. Right now we are only serving the Twin Cities 7-county metro area. And we would love to expand. You know, there's a lot of need for things like this in outstate Minnesota, where there aren't as many people and not as many autistic adults to serve autistic youth. So we'd like to connect people that way. We'd like to increase the age range. We probably will be going up through transition age, because that's sort of like 19, 20, 21, 22. Those are really difficult years for a lot of autistic people. So I'm hoping we'll be able to expand in that direction. We are always looking to diversify our participant pool. We've done workshops and outreach with the Somali community, with the African American community, with the Latino community, and we still need more diversity within our ranks. So we're working on that. We're always looking for mentors. So people who are interested both in being a mentor and a mentee can visit our website, which is very easy. It's just www.autismmentorshipprogram.org. Easy but long. autismmentorshipprogram.org, and can find out about how to apply. Let's see, we're always looking for more funding. And I want to thank the Carlson Family Foundation and the Bime Foundation, who funded us for this year. We could not do it without them. We're also looking for maybe an organization that believes in our mission and wants to incorporate us into the work that they do. And we're working on some exciting new ideas about other ways for adults to connect, which I can't say much more about now, but some exciting ideas are brewing, so stay tuned.
Oh, well, thank you both. Emily Goldberg, founder of the Autism Mentorship Program, and Uma Oswald, one of the mentors. I'm just so inspired by the work both of you are doing, and it was just a privilege and an honor to talk with you both today. So thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this episode of Mom Enough. I hope you found this as inspiring as Marty, my mom, and I did today. And we hope you'll tune in again for another episode next week. I'm Erin, here with my mom, Marty, and we are Mom Enough.
Content copyrighted by Marty and Erin Erickson. All rights reserved. Visit MomEnough.com for an archive of all Mom Enough shows and many free downloadable resources on child development, parenting, and maternal health and well-being.
Do you think I'll have a show called Kid Enough someday?